ball spark.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Glad to have you along for the next hour. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about. We can have an early peek at the NFL playoffs over the weekend coming up. What games are we looking forward to? Is there a road team you think has a great chance? Would you change, now that you see the field, would you change your preseason Super Bowl pick? We've got some high school hoops to talk about, the weekend tournaments that were concluded. Class A and B rankings are locked in. Playoff pairings released on Friday. And would you change your mind? I think last time I asked this question, you said over 2.5 teams that we cover in the Paragon Network to make the state tournament. Are you still in the mindset of over, or would you go under? We'll talk about that. Jackson Dart, USC quarterback in the portal. That can only mean one thing. We'll talk about the college football national championship game. Play some sound from that one. And right off the top, breaking news. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line, 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. We've also got to look at the Western Oklahoma Realty Bowl Mania final standings. I feel like that's a must to take a look at where everybody ended up there. 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, stay in touch with us a couple of ways, KADSAM.com or the Paragon app. That app has everything. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News. It's got Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, both back live tonight with live stream video of high school hoops. Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and check us out on iTunes or KADSAM.com. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning.
You know, normally you're the news guy, and you know, you have no idea the breaking news, do you?
Is it sports news?
It is breaking sports news.
Well, you're the sports guy.
That's right. So I'm the one that should know this, right?
You're on top of it, yes. What is it?
Breaking sports news is this. After last night's board meeting, Zach Maynard is the new head coach of the Elk City Big Elk football team. That was officially made official last night. I got to go ahead to release that news this morning from Coach Hunt. So, Coach Zach Maynard is the new head man at Big Elk football. He came from Watonga. He was on the staff this year as a defensive coordinator. And I know just talking to some of the guys that were on that team, he was an integral part in everything they did defensively. So that is official that Zach Maynard is going to be the new head coach of Big Elk football. We will effort to get him in here sometime this week. Hopefully at the end of the week we can get Coach Maynard in here and we'll talk to him about where he sees the program headed, what is his vision to continue to build upon the season that the Elks had this year. So that is the breaking news. Zach Maynard is the new head coach of Big Elk football.
So another storied football program has hired a defensive coordinator to lead their squad.
Yeah, there you go.
I like it. I like it. Future's bright.
I don't think there's any doubt. I know the guys, a bunch of the kids really liked what he brought this year to the table, and I know that he, talking to Coach Hunt, enjoyed his time and what he learned from kind of the new school, learning from the old school a little bit there this year with Coach Weatherly and Coach Meadows, obviously, kind of picking their brains and getting some things from them. So that's
should be a pretty...
I don't know how big of a surprise it is to anybody that was paying attention to what was going on, but it's official. Zach Maynard is the head coach of Big Elk football after last night.
Young guy?
Mm-hmm.
Young guy? Younger than us guy?
I bet so.
Now
it's
we're
close.
Listen, we're not very young anymore. So
that's actually true.
Now all these new hires are younger than
remember,
us.
Remember, he's like Hunter's age. Hunter's younger than us, right?
Yes.
They know each other from NEO.
Yes. Well, good for that young man.
Yeah.
It's not like we can tell him what to do, though. He's much smarter than we are at football. But that's a great transition because of what you just said. Him being on the staff for the last couple of years under Meadows and able to pick his brain and pick the other guys that have been in the program for a while. So, should be a smooth transition.
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome.
Definitely think so.
Congratulations to him.
Yeah, good stuff there.
Looking forward to getting him in here.
All right, so last night, college football national championship game. Man, it started out like the 2011 LSU-Alabama regular season game. It was field goals. It was defense. You know what I mean? It started out like not a dud because it was really entertaining, even though nobody was scoring touchdowns, if that makes any sense. You know, it wasn't just it felt like back then it was just terrible football. The teams were kind of moving the ball, but they weren't able – both teams would bow their neck in the red zone and kick field goals, right? And
right.
So, it went back and forth. Finally, Georgia hit the big run with Cook to get in position for their first touchdown of the night, first touchdown by anybody. That made it 13-9. Bama kicked a field goal for 13-12. Then they went down and scored a touchdown to take the lead after that crazy play that, what all went into that thing working the way it did on that fumble by Bennett, just nuts. Because I don't even think that the Alabama defensive back that just went over there nonchalantly and grabbed the ball, it never in his wildest imagination was that a fumble. He thought it was an incomplete pass, and he just happened to be there, so he took an extra step and caught it.
Right.
By the slimmest of slim margins in bounds, right? And so when they, when it happened, you didn't hear, a lot of times you'll hear in the background the referee go, the ruling on the field is an incomplete pass. You didn't hear that immediately. And then you kind of saw them getting together, and all of a sudden they called it a fumble, and I'm like, there is no chance. And even Kirk and Chris were like, well, even if it is a fumble, it doesn't matter. And heck, even the officials said, the ruling on the field's a fumble. If it's not, it's intentional grounding, which the guy in the booth said that shouldn't happen either because he got hit before he threw, affecting the throw. Anyway, I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be the shortest review of all time. They're going to see that it's an incomplete pass, and we're going to move on. And then all of a sudden you see it, and you're like, whoa. I'm not 100% sure that's a fumble, but I'm not 100% sure it's not.
Right.
And so now it goes, okay, was he in bounds? And the first angle is like, nope. And then they got the one from the actual sidelines like, yep. Uh-oh. Stetson Bennett just made the biggest mistake of the night. And sure enough, Bama scores and wins. And then I thought the entire game was that next drive. Instead of going into a shell, instead of trying to run the football, instead of being scared to put the ball back in Stetson Bennett's hands, they go out, four plays, 75 yards. They had a penalty for an interference. Bennett got sacked, and then he throws the 40-yard touchdown to Mitchell to wrestle the lead right back away from Alabama. He was 3-for-3 on that drive for 68 yards and that 40-yard touchdown to Mitchell. I thought, we see this so often against Bama where you don't play to win, mate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just go in a shell. Kirby Smart did not do it. And he trusted in Bennett, which I told everybody that was texting with me, as soon as they got the first pick, Georgia that is, Bennett runs out there and he does nothing from the 45, 40-yard line, whatever. I'm like, this is it. He cannot play in this game. If you're going to win this game, you have to put JT Daniels in. I truly believe that at the time. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, after Bennett fumbles, he's 4-for-4 the rest of the way, 80-something yards and 2 touchdowns, and he becomes one of the main reasons they win the game. Just a shocking turnaround by Stetson Bennett. And kudos to Kirby Smart for not going in a shell after he made that mistake in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, a lot of coaches would do that. A lot of coaches would make that change that you're talking about. But, kudos to Kirby for sticking with his guy right there. And one thing I failed to mention or failed to realize yesterday was, what's the old saying about playing a team twice? Hard to beat a team twice. It's very hard to do it because, especially good teams like that. So I failed to look at that, and kudos to Georgia, though. It's funny as, we always equate things or look at things and compare them to stuff that we're used to. Kind of like that semifinal game, we told the keys of that game, which you had to attack. If you're Oak City, you had to attack Clinton. You had to take the fight to Clinton. And that's what Georgia, I think, did to Alabama. They didn't. We're not going to be scared of these guys. We're going to take the fight to them and keep pounding, and eventually the breaks would come, and they did.
I brought this up to Jim yesterday, talking about, you know, in picking this game and deciding who you think was going to win, how much focus do you put on the one versus the other 12? And I think a lot of people that picked Bama did it because it's Bama. Listen, no one should be ashamed of picking Alabama. I mean, that's the you know, a lot of times that's the obvious pick.
Sure.
And that the way that they dominated Georgia in that first matchup, it made sense. But the two things that didn't was, one, the line. Everybody and their dogs saw that game, right?
Yeah.
Everybody saw Bama dismantle Georgia in the second half of that game. So why was Georgia favored? And then
that was my big question.
What? It's because Vegas thought they were better. And here's the truth. Georgia was better all year long. And I think, you know, going back, when you think about that Friday before the SEC title game, and how much the perception of those teams changed in a lot of people's minds just by that one afternoon. Because going into the – you couldn't hardly find anybody to pick Alabama to beat Georgia going into the title game, right?
Right.
And then you come out of it and it's like, oh, my gosh, Georgia laid an egg. Should they even be in the playoff? Da-da-da. When you look at what they did this season, only Clemson back in 2018, which Clemson at the time was the only 15-0 team ever with Trevor Lawrence, them and Georgia – are the only two teams in the AP era since 1936, the AP poll era, to win 13 games by 15 or more points. That's the dominance that Georgia had. Every game they won was by 15 or more, except the opener against Clemson.
Right.
And obviously the loss to Bama, but they didn't win that one, so it doesn't make any difference. But even then, though, I'm still, when you look at some of these numbers, it's the second largest loss ever for Saban. The team that beat him worse just happens to be that Clemson team. Stetson Bennett is the first former walk-on to beat a Saban team since Brian Griese in 1997 at Michigan when he was at Michigan State. You know what those two have in common?
What's that?
They both won the national title. So that tells you what it takes to beat a Saban team like that.
Yes.
You know, this is, the, like I said, second largest loss that he's ever had, and they both came in the title game. So that tells you the quality of team it takes to beat an Alabama team
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Just throughout the game, I mean, I thought that Jameson Williams' injury was huge for Bama. Kudos to them. They didn't do a whole bunch of making excuses about it, but they all did. And that's just the truth. It's not an excuse when you say, man, things changed. Because you went from having – I mean, Mechie is one thing to be gone, but you still have him. Then when he's gone – now you don't know the name on the back of anybody's jersey, except for Slade Bolden, right? I mean, after that, and he's like the third or fourth option. And it was huge, like Ajayi Hall, 84. He dropped a couple of passes that could have made huge difference. They just didn't have, and it's weird to say that about Bama, but like the depth wasn't there.
Right.
In their receiver core. And it made a huge difference. I mean, it didn't feel like they had any, outside of Latu maybe at the tight end, it didn't feel like they had any explosiveness. Like, explosive plays weren't coming in the second half after Williams went down.
No, I never felt that. It's funny. You know, we never really dove into momentum when, what was that, Thursday, when we kind of brought that up. But it never felt like Alabama was able to gather that up. You know, like
no.
You talk about, you as the game went on, you sensed that you sensed that they were not going to have those explosive plays. It's like, man, Georgia is really hampering them down. You know, and sure, the excuses, and it is what it is. I mean, when you have guys out, but that I think was a little kind of shocking to me was it's Alabama, so it's always next guy.
Yeah, we always think they just have all these guys ready
right,
to go,
right.
And they didn't at the receiver core.
Yeah, so that was a little eye-opening for me. Questions for me were going into the future with Alabama, and they'll probably be preseason. I've already seen.
Yeah, way too early.
Way too early polls have them at number one, and I got issues with that. But it makes me question, okay, you know, did Georgia just lay out the blueprint to, you know, to beating a Alabama team? But it takes a historic team like that to beat a Nick Saban team.
I mean, think about what it's taken to beat him in these playoffs. One of the all-time greatest runs at the end of the season from Ohio State back in 2014 with a third-team quarterback, Cardale Jones, and the way they blew through everybody like the last 4 weeks.
Right.
Golly, they beat Wisconsin like 70-7 or something like that in the Big Ten title game, beat Bama, and then beat Oregon. So that it took that. Then it took Deshaun Watson and Hunter Renfrow. You hear those names on a bunch of Sundays now. It took those guys, those incredible guys, to beat a team. Then it took Lawrence in the way that they – I mean, an all-timer of a great team. I mean, if you just look at their – if you just look at their – I lost my train of thought. That's what happens.
You got a lot of the
Clemson, anyway. Clemson, yeah. They were the first team to go 15-0 at the time.
Right.
And then, you know, there's a stat how dominant they were in that 15-0. And then this one. The other ones had quarterbacks. This one had one of the best defenses of all time, especially considering the way the game is played now and the way that Georgia was able to dominate defensively against the offensive mindset of teams. It's incredible. Incredible the way that Bama has been able to be so consistent in what it takes to beat them. And Georgia did it. And I picked them, and it was half-hearted because I didn't ever really think Stetson Bennett could do it. And, man, he stepped up huge.
Yeah. I was riding the Georgia bandwagon all season long, even when they weren't not, you know, they were riding Alabama's coattails.
Yeah, you had them one before I did.
Yeah, I was like, man, this Georgia team is different. But the Bennett thing stood out to me in this game in particular. And then it's Nick Saban in a national title game. So, I mean, can you blame me trying, you know, picking Alabama because of everything? You know, Nick Saban going up against a walk-on. I'm going to pick Nick Saban every time. But it was the other pieces around that walk-on, too, that were very complimentary to him and able for them to get that win. But you got to give it up to Bennett because he, like you said, he made the plays when he had to.
Yeah, he did. And then after that drive, they scored the touchdown. And then you have that next drive. And, man, Georgia did to Bama what Bama does to teams. They just lined up and ran it right down their throat to almost ice the game. It was still an 8-point lead, and that's something else we could talk about. I know we had conversations on the text about what happened there, but – you know, they run it and they run it and they run it and they run it until Bama brings the house on a 3rd-and-1 and just a nice little flip out to Bowers and there's nobody there. You know, the perfect play action play on a short yardage and that touchdown scores. I think it's interesting, you know, I thought of it immediately when they got the penalty plus the touchdown. I'm thinking, all right, Bryce Young's on the other side. I know we just said all that about no explosive plays, but we have seen him do that.
Yeah.
When the chips are down, he has. Even in the loss to A&M, he was taking them up and down the field to tie that, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. to keep them in that game. Obviously, the Auburn drive is fresh on everybody's mind.
Right.
At the end of that game. And when they got that they could have taken it half the distance to the goal, so instead of at the 3, they could snap it at the 1.5. I wonder if it ever even went through Kirby Smart's mind to go for 2, to ice it with your – especially the way they just ran it down their throat, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If it wouldn't have looked like that, maybe not. But, I mean, I just don't see how in the world they don't get a yard. You know, it didn't look – for the first time in a long time, probably since that Clemson game, it didn't look like Bama could stop them.
Right.
And stop them from running the football.
Right.
So I wonder if he seriously thought about it. It didn't matter because of what happened next. I've got some calls of what happened next.
Awesome. Radio calls, I hope.
I'm going to start with the Georgia radio, Scott Howard. I have got the ESPN Deportes. And then I've also got Eli Gold on the Alabama Radio Network. So we'll start with Scott Howard and the Deportes first.
And they reverse it with Billingsley back to the right. Snap to Young. Drops back. Pressure from the edges. He throws near sideline. And it's intercepted. Intercepted. Keely Ringo at the 21. Off he goes. 40, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30. Near sideline. Breaks a tackle. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. 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 Georgia. 54 seconds to go. Keely Ringo will about a 75-yard return. No flags. 32-18. Let the celebration begin.
Cambiando estaba Billingsley. Young interceptado. Y a ver hasta dónde lo puede devolver. Es Keely Ringo. Sigue Ringo. Corta adentro. Ringo. Touchdown, Georgia.
I always love those.
Those are fun.
All right, then here is Eli Gold. Not quite the excitement on this one as there was on the others.
Billingsley in motion. Goes back to the right side. Again, Bryce stands back. Looks. Throws. It's intercepted. Caught by the Bulldogs at the 20, up the near side, 25, to the 15, to the 40, down the near sideline, 20, to the 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Georgia, on their second interception of the night.
You could definitely tell which side was Georgia and which side was Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
The great Eli Gold, though, he's fantastic, and we've heard him a bunch of times with celebratory calls throughout the years at Alabama. But man, just it was a fun game. There was drama till the very end, till that play right there. Even when Georgia scored that touchdown to go up 8, that's why I was thinking, okay, man, do you go for 2?
Right.
To make it 9.
To
make it 2 scores, because in my mind, I had no doubt that once they kicked the extra point, that game was coming down to a 2-point conversion. I had no doubt in my mind that Bama was going to go score, and they just didn't.
Yep.
And kudos to Kirby Smart and that Georgia defense. That was just awesome.
As soon as the game's over, and we kind of alluded to the way too early poll and looking ahead, and as soon as it's over, everybody looks ahead. And I know my answer to this question, but the way Georgia won that game, could it be a changing of the guard in the SEC, or is it going to have to take a couple more dominant seasons like this to go, okay, now it's Georgia's turn to run the SEC run college football?
No.
It's still Alabama and everybody else.
As long as Nick Saban is on that sidelines, Alabama is going to be what Alabama is.
Yeah. What's scary to me is imagine when Georgia actually gets they have one on campus in Vandergriff, but a really big quarterback. I mean, they won this thing with the walk-on.
Yeah.
Imagine they get a real blue chip or a big-time recruit, an Arch Manning-type player. I mean, we're about to talk about Jackson Dart. What if he decides to go to Georgia?
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
There's rumblings of that happening, actually.
Bennett can come back. JT Daniels is already there. Brock Vandegrift, which was one of the top two recruits a year ago, is there. It's interesting because with the way that college football had been, say, since, maybe that Ohio State victory. Maybe the next year with Bama, with Jake Coker, leading his team to the title. After that, didn't it feel like it took an all-world quarterback to do it?
Mm-hmm.
You had Watson, Tua came in to do it, Lawrence, Burrow, Mac Jones, he was good, but also the skill guys with him were off the charts good. And now all of a sudden it feels like this is back with this win, more back in the 2011-2012 Greg McElroy, A.J. McCarron-type Bama teams that won it with defense. And just, and don't screw up, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, Bennett made plays. There's no doubt about that. But his main job was don't screw up so bad this defense can't win us the game. And he was phenomenal at it.
Yeah.
And then when you got him making plays in these two playoff games, that was just icing on the cake, and then they were almost impossible to beat at that point. So I don't know. I don't know that that's just not – it doesn't seem like it's Kirby Smart's DNA, right, to be fly. I mean, he's had these guys. I mean, he's got two of the top recruits in their class. With Daniels and Vandegrift. But even if they're the quarterback, it doesn't feel like he's going to let him cut loose. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe in certain situations like he did last night in that drive to take back the lead. Oh, excuse me. To take back the lead. But I don't know. It's just hard for me to – it's hard for me to believe somebody else is going to be the king of the SEC until somebody else is the king of the SEC.
Yeah.
And that brings up the question that's on the text line from Dakota. How much longer can Saban do it? He's 70.
Yeah, we always...
Last night, if they would have won, he would have been the oldest to ever do it. The oldest to ever win a national championship by 15 days. Older than Bobby Bowden was back in 99 when Florida State beat Virginia Tech.
That's hard to believe.
But you know, back then it seemed like Bowden was old. It doesn't feel like Nick Saban's 70 years old to me.
It looks like he could do it another 15 years. Just by the look of him. You know what I mean? I don't know what the Fountain of Youth is in Alabama, but it's just, you know, he walks into that place wearing a leather jacket, for crying out loud, looking like he's not 70, looking like he just broke 50.
Yeah, I know.
So,
and he's with it. He's still mentally feels like he's as sharp as ever.
Yeah, yeah. That is the question, though. He's 70. How long can this go? How long? You know, what more does he have to accomplish?
I mean, I think last night, Nathan and I were talking about this yesterday. He wins out when last night with the team. Let's face it. This Alabama team
wasn't the best.
Wasn't even close. It really wasn't. I mean, when you look at what he's had there, but that just shows, first off, how that program is at such a level that nobody else's is at, quite frankly, year after year after year after year. It's one thing for Georgia. I mean, look at Georgia. They pop up every 4 years. They've been to the playoff twice in 8 years. He's played for the title six of those 8 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like it's slowing down, and it doesn't feel like he can't relate. You know, he doesn't seem like the old guy that – needs to be put out to pasture by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
To me. And so I don't think that that's happening yet. Now, I do think that Kirby Smart's got Georgia on a great path. And we'll see what happens at A&M with that great recruiting class or what have you. But right now in that league, it feels like it's just going to be a collision course every single year between those two.
Yep.
Until somebody else could join the fray.
Yeah.
And you look at the recruiting rankings, they put that up in the pregame. I think since 2010, the team with the number one recruiting class in the nation has been one of those two. Alabama like 8 times and Georgia 3. And Georgia's have come more recent, and yeah, you looked out there and saw why. And when you go to the draft coming up in April, you'll know why. Because there will be tons, the draft will be littered with both of those teams.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a fun game. It wasn't – I never really at any point thought, I don't want to watch this because it's two SEC teams. You know what I mean? Just because the speed of those big guys on both sides was just so much fun to watch. And I know everybody's so enthralled with offense and have been around here for the last 5 years for sure, if not even more than that. But at the end of the day, to get over the hump, if you're Oklahoma or Oklahoma State – those big dudes near the ball is the difference. And you know what? Both teams didn't run out of those. Bama may have ran out of receivers, but they damn sure didn't run out of those giants in the middle of the field running down anybody and everybody that had the ball.
Exactly. Yeah. That football at its core has always been about that, and I don't think that'll ever change. And so it gives me hope when you see Oklahoma State, the way they – ran through the Big 12 with that defense and honestly should have won the Big 12, just come up a yard short. And then OU hiring a defensive-minded guy. You know, my favorite saying is everything kind of comes full circle, and it appears so with both in-state schools. And I'm glad that's the focus, is defensive-minded guys, and then it goes to recruiting and getting those big hog mollies and right there on the line, right there in the trenches. That's what you want.
Yeah, and it's obvious that's going to have to happen as Oklahoma transitions into the SEC whenever that happens. That's going to be job one for Brent Venables on both lines, not just the defensive line, the offensive line too.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to figure out a way to block those guys and have them that they can't block and figure out a way to block them when they have them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see. But yeah, Georgia, 41-year streak.
41-year.
Broken.
Yeah.
With the national title.
It's a long time.
A long time. Underachieving program, if we're being honest. Only three conference titles since Herschel Walker ran the football for the Bulldogs. But none of that matters today because they're the national titleist. I get an interesting question or an interesting comment on the text line to me from our man Billy. By the way, Billy rattled the cages over at Clinton. Jared said he noticed that there is now red in front of Tornadoes on the championship shirts. So
saw that.
You got to the right people.
Billy, yeah. He
Billy's a mover and a shaker. Gets her done.
He is. He's everywhere in Clinton, especially tomorrow.
Yes. He said, I believe Georgia starts beating Alabama like they did last night. Saban will bow out. The guy can't go forever. I agree with the last part of that for sure. The guy cannot go forever. You wouldn't think he could. And it brings, I guess, the – God, when do you think – I mean, how much more does he got?
Well, just like I said earlier, either way – wouldn't shock me if it's one, he goes another 5 years or even more because of what we've said. He doesn't look 70. Looks like he can still go another 10 years. Or two, on the other side of it, he says, what more do you want from me? What more can I give you guys? I've given you this many national titles. I'm the all-time winningest coach. He's better than Bear Bryant, which I never thought we would see in our lifetime. And I don't think... will we ever see someone else catch what he's done? So he doesn't have to answer to anybody. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if we hear at a press conference has been announced and he calls it quits. So either way, it wouldn't shock me. Either way.
See, I would be surprised
if he
just came out in a week and said, guess what, I'm done.
Right. There's been no talk of that.
No.
Been no talk of that.
It's like kind of the elephant in the room. Always, because he is 70. But if there's no, I mean, there is zero deterioration of that program.
No, there's no, I mean, even after last night's, and that's why I was questioning, was there cracks? Were they exposed? Well, I think you have to do it about two or three more times in a 5-year span.
Yeah.
You know,
try not to let them play for the national title.
Yeah.
Yeah, missed the playoffs 2 years in a row or something.
If they missed the playoffs a couple years in a row, then those questions would come up. But no, but for me, it's I don't – either way wouldn't shock me because he has nothing – he has nobody to answer to anymore. He has no questions to answer anymore. Can he do this? Can't – he's done it all. So he would be okay to walk away from it, but again – wouldn't shock me if he does it for another 5+ seasons.
See, that's Billy just took the words right out of my mouth. I think losses like this make him even more motivated.
Yeah.
To not go out like that. I don't know what I don't know what he thinks going out like is going to be. You know what I mean? Like in his mind, what does that look like? I have no idea. You know, and it's pretty weird because it seems like as it's gone along, doesn't it feel like he's gotten a lot more grandpa-ish than he was, say, a decade ago? He's not near as crotchety as he was, to me. And he's more like the, like when he talks about, like this week, you know, the NIL and all that stuff, he's not like whining as much about it as he did, say, hurry up offenses back at the first of the, you know, the 2010s. And how that was ruining the game and all that, just because I think he was frustrated he couldn't figure out how to stop it, right?
Right.
But with this NIL stuff, he almost sounds more like Yoda or something, to where, you know, he's like the wise one.
I was a little shocked his stance on that.
I mean, he's
saying it needs to be regulated more. I'm thinking, wait a minute, that could be your cash cow. That could be how you get guys on campus. And he mentions the haves and have nots, which we've been saying. And he wants to make college football fair, I guess.
Yeah, and that's pretty interesting because he didn't have just Bama in mind.
Yeah, no, yeah.
It was the whole sport.
You're right.
I mean, at this point, I think
But you know there's some big wigs in Tuscaloosa going, shut up.
Yeah, well.
We don't want to regulate this. I can sign a check and get a Caleb Williams on campus or this guy or that guy. But if we regulate it, you just handcuffed us more, Nick. Yeah.
Well.
But he's been winning before it.
Well, yeah.
They're winning before the NIL. Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have – that's not what his offer is.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
You know?
His offer is playing that game last night year in, year out.
That's right. And oh, by the way, send you to the NFL.
That too.
That's what his offer is.
Here's your NIL. There's your money.
That's right. And, yeah, we'll get you some while you're here.
Play for me and you're going to – yeah.
But the money you're making here pales in comparison to what you'll be making as you go through this process of getting yourself ready to be an NFL player.
Right.
That's what he's got that nobody else has. You know, and yeah, here's the text, you know, Texas A&M. I'm sure they do have more money to offer. But at the end of the day, I think the secret sauce for Nick Saban is sure he can literally get anybody he wants from a recruiting aspect. Oma, I mean, there's a few, but whatever. He can pick and choose of the best ones there are. But I think it's a secret sauce that he's figured out. Is there some of them that ain't worth it?
Right.
There's some of those top guys that ain't worth it.
Yep.
It's not worth putting up with them. And guess what? I can just get a guy that's just as good as him, that has a way better attitude and a more team attitude than this guy does, and we don't have to put up with this headache, and we'll be just as good, and if not better, without having to put up with that crap.
Yeah.
And because he is Saban and Alabama with the success they've had, it works. He's the only one that can do that.
Right.
Everybody else.
He is forgiven if he does not go after that five-star head case.
Because he just gets a different one.
It's Nick Saban. And Nick we trust is probably the motto.
Well, of course. And it should be.
Yeah.
And it should be. And it's proven that what he's doing is successful by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Ahead of everybody else from a, you know, year-in, year-out standpoint. All right, let's look at the high school hoops. Did you see the rankings?
I glanced at them, yes, I did.
In Class A and B, so let's see, Arapo Butler, boys, stayed in the top eight. Arnett girls stayed in the top eight. Obviously, Hammond girls stayed in the top eight. Is that everybody? Oh, no, Mount View Godiva boys are number two in B.
And that should be a good game tonight.
I think it's interesting where everybody's going to go.
Yeah, that is.
So, like,
go ahead.
When you look at B, there's no, at least on this side of the state, there's only one school that has both teams in the top eight, and that's Duke. Both the boys and the girls are in the top eight. And on the girls' side, it feels to me like it's pretty obvious kind of the way this splits, right? You've got Lakeba Sickles and Duke kind of in the southwest-ish. And you've got Arnett and Hammond to head to the north. But then you got to fit the boys' teams with them. So if you've got Duke already there, then – you know what, Indiahoma, Fort Cobb, or Mountain View. And then the other two probably shoot north. And because of where they're at, they probably meet somewhere right along I-40 as they go along. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it feels like even though Duke's the only team with both teams ranked, at least in Class B, the splits are pretty...
It is pretty...
Pretty obvious, right?
Right.
I mean, as far as the four teams... It'll be in the two areas out this way on both sides.
Yeah, I would say so. You mentioned, I mean, you got me excited if they meet somewhere on I-40. What are we thinking, Swazoo?
No, I wouldn't be shocked at all if that's not the case.
Probably not here. I've always dreamed of that.
Be a good time for it.
In the Pioneer Center. Of an area tournament.
But you've got Cash, you know, that ping pong's back and forth, Cash and Chickasha.
Cash
down
Chickasha,
in that southern part.
Yeah.
Which that makes sense for the Dukes and the
north is like
Woodward,
Enid. Those are really the two main sites I can think of.
The difference this time is the teams that are coming will be more, especially on the boy, on the boys' side for sure, be more southerly. So maybe, you know, you're not meeting at Woodward because you've got everybody in the panhandle, right?
Yeah.
You got to come this way because of the teams down south of I-40. So I think that'd be super interesting in class B because it does, to me, feels like it's pretty easy to see where the break is.
Right.
In class A, totally different because there are one, two, three teams with both ranked? You've got Caddo, Hydro Weekly.
Caddo, Hydro Weekly.
And Van Oss, where both teams are ranked.
Right.
And so then you kind of look at what's around. I think what's going to happen is either Calumet's going to go up to with Garber and Hydro Weekly and Arapahoe Butler stay put, you know, or one of those two go up north, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ceiling's there on the girls' side, so that probably, yeah, that makes that almost have to. Then you got Okarchi, Oklahoma Christian Academy's in the city. So that'll be, you know, it feels like a centralized north-central type spots for, you know, the teams out here with Arapahoe Butler, you know, an Enid or a, gosh, what else, where else has that been sometimes?
It's been in Enid. It's been in.
You know, maybe Swass would be a good spot for some of that, too.
I see that happening for the Hydros and Arapahoe.
Yeah, Calumet's there.
The question is what, you know, Calumet.
Calumet boys.
Right down the road from on I-40. Yeah. And Calumet girls, they're not ranked, are they?
No.
They're a good team, though. Kind of shocks me they're not in the top 20, at least.
But maybe because... Oh, no, they're not both there. Never mind. Strike that. I don't know. I can't wait to see what happens on Friday. Because I always think, oh, yeah, this makes total sense to do this and this and this. And then we look at it, you go, huh?
Oh, well.
It feels like there's always one where it's like, huh.
I think sometimes
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, the OSSA is kind of hog-tied sometimes. Their hands are kind of tied because of one team, boys or girls, ranked high, the other one's not. You got to be fair, and sometimes you'll just see some odd placings and placements of teams.
Yeah, when you think about Hammond going all the way to Cleveland a couple years ago.
Right.
But that was because they didn't have both. You know, they were kind of up in the air. And that's where this year it really kind of feels like in both. Class A and Class B, even the ones that are just singles in either girls or boys, they all kind of have pairs, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. On both sides to where it can work out and there won't be just a whale of travel for some of these teams going here or there. And so I can't wait for Friday. I know it's just turned to January, but, man, once you start seeing that, you know, you don't get the bracket, but you see what's coming. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Then the realization comes, playoffs are like 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, didn't we just start basketball? Feels like it. And we're a month away from the playoffs starting.
It's crazy. Speaking of can't wait, I can't wait for tonight's game between Mountain View boys and Arapahoe boys.
Oh, yeah. That ought to be a great one.
You know, Class A versus Class B, but you got two high-quality teams, both in the top five. In each class, that one looks like a lot of fun. And then this Friday for Arapahoe, they're at Calumet. Talk about a little preview there.
Boy, they've had some good games too.
Yep.
But over the past handful of years, those two have played some really good games. Calumet and Arapahoe Butler.
Yep.
Tonight, gosh, what do we got tonight? I forgot to bring my sheet in. I know I'll be at Weatherford. Boy, the Elks and the Elkettes facing white-hot teams coming out of the break as the Lady Eagles were 4-0 last week, won their own tournament, and they dismantled everybody, man. They were awesome throughout in their own tournament. They come in 12-2 with losses at the birth of Frank Teague to Perry and then also in overtime to Lomega. But then last week, they put it on Clinton 61-33 in just a regular season game on Tuesday. Then in their tournament, They beat Elgin 85-35. They beat Bishop McGinnis, which is Class 5A's number 13, 63-35. They beat 5A's number 12, Piedmont, by 30, 75-45. They were dominant. And then on the boys' side, they're kind of coming into their own. They dropped the Custer County conflict to Clinton on Tuesday. Then they beat 5A's number 20, Lot Nike, 69-52. They beat Elgin 59-40. And then they upset Class 4A number 4 Tuttle in the final, 59-49. And I know, talking to Coach Stevens, a guy that we were amazed at physically on the football field, yeah. CJ Nixon, the yeah. freshman, it's a totally different animal on the basketball field, on the basketball court. That dude can go. I watched him play a few times here in the tip-off Invitational at Elk back in December.
He's so, going to be fun to watch next.
Oh, my gosh, 4 years. That's the yeah. problem. If you're Elk City, if you're Clinton, if you're anybody in Class 4A, you're going to look at that dude and go, wait a minute. We got to figure out a way to stop him for 4 years? Come on, man. Are you serious? So I'm excited to see both yeah. of those teams. You know, it's going to be an uphill struggle, obviously, for the Elkettes and the Big Elks, but both coming off good weeks at Hinton with 2-1 showings, third for the Elkettes and the consolation winning. For the Elks, but it's going to be a different animal going to Weatherford this evening over in the Eagle's Nest.
There's a lot of, looking at the schedule for tonight, there's a lot of Paragon schools, that is, that are not playing. I know Leedy is hosting Visai and Arapahoe Butler is oh, we mentioned that Mountain View Godibo. I feel like
Merritt and Sayre,
that's right.
Yeah, Merritt and Sayre. Sayre's at Merritt, I'm pretty sure.
Cheyenne's not playing, Canute's not playing, Eric's not playing. So a little bit of a break because, I mean, played a lot of games last week with tournaments. Some teams choosing, let's take a Tuesday off, because then next week a lot of tournaments pick back up. I know the Bi-County is at Merritt. Is that a week-long event or is that just 3 day?
3 day.
3 day. I know the West Central, that is a week-long tournament over at Swazoo, back at Swazoo, thankfully. So it's kind of, you know, a little bit of a break right here. I say a little, just a one game off. But some teams are playing, so that's good.
Yeah, and that's the difference between those smaller schools and, say, you know, Elk City and Merritt. You don't see a bunch of days off in January for either one of those bigger ones because they played football. And they didn't get those 8 to 10 games under their belt before the Christmas break. You're talking yep. about 3 or 4, maybe 5 if they, you know, for Merritt being in the 5 county, that helps, you know, put some games under their belt. But from here on out, man, yeah, the smaller schools will get a Tuesday or get a Friday here and there off, especially in between these tournament weeks, like right now, you know?
Yeah.
But for the larger schools, it's game, 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 game. That's what Coach Stevens talked about, how fast it comes. And that makes that Christmas break practicing so important, because that's kind of the last string of practices that you're able to put together, just because – you're playing so many games in such a short period of time, and you don't want to wear everybody out
right.
in between games. But, you know, you got to figure out a way to work on things as well in practice.
I'm really excited about next week in the West Central, because it always highlights some of the better teams out here in this side of the state. We got, of course, Hydro Weekly in that one, Calumet in that one, Canute in that one, Thomas in that tournament. I'm sure I'm missing others.
Arapahoe, yes.
Butler. Thank you. That, and what's crazy about that tournament has already been seeded. So they're, you know, which kind of, I was like, wait, aren't they going to wait like the weekend before and then seeded or you know, but they seeded out a couple of weeks ago. So it's ready to go, and there's some interesting matchups that could develop in the semifinals.
I'm ready to see a Bi-County bracket. I haven't seen that yet.
I have not either. Sure, if we look hard enough, we can find it. Because there's some good ones in that one, too. Shit, man, we are flying through the basketball season.
Yeah.
That still blows my mind.
I was wondering about Laverne. We got a text there. Laverne boys pretty salty after winning the state in football. They were the Oil Center Classic winners last weekend. Beat Leedy in the final by, what, 55-48, I think was the final. It was like a 7-point game. Hmm. And, of course, then, you know, it leads us to Leedy. I can't wait to see what happens with them. Boys especially, once the playoffs get going. Because you don't see them with the record that they had pre-Christmas. I mean, heck, they didn't even play on Saturday at the Five County, right? The girls did, the boys didn't? Or was it the other way around?
Help me. Who? I'm sorry.
Leedy. Didn't they lose the first two games of the Five County? Didn't even play on Saturday?
I believe you're right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just unheard of. But then it looks like maybe they put it together during Christmas. Got a couple of really good wins up there against Forgan and Moreland. And then played Laverne tough. So maybe Coach Carpenter's got those guys kind of coming back around, and they could be one of those teams.
Shouldn't shock anybody.
Oh, I mean, if you're one of the top eight and you're a seed, the last one you want to see, say, on Thursday night of the regional is going to be Leedy.
Leedy team.
Like, yeah. Oh, my gosh, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You know, Eric's always been that way, you know, here on the girls' side. Like, oh, no, please don't. Please don't put Eric and ours on Thursday. It's too early to have to play a team that tough, right?
Right.
And I think that's the way it's going to be for somebody looking at Leedy.
Oh, we've seen it all the time. It doesn't have to be just Leedy. There's teams that maybe flown under the radar, didn't get the ranking where they needed to be, and then they find themselves in a region or area where they're upsetting a team because they were, quite frankly, just better. I think Leedy is a team that – they could upset a couple people in the playoffs.
You've seen this team, I think, haven't you? Oh, yeah, you've seen them, I think.
Leedy?
No. A different team in Class B boys that wasn't able to climb into the top eight, even though they won the tournament at Hammond. That's Sentinel. 13-3. Two wins over ranked top five Class A Arapahoe Butler. They've got a win over Laquipa Sickles, who was ranked at the time. They have fallen out of the rankings, though, so maybe that was a preseason ranking that went awry. But what about Sentinel? Are they another one of those teams that you're going to be like, oh, no?
I think sometimes when the Arapahoe thing stands out to me, I remember talking to one of their kids directly and asked them, it was after they beat them the second time in that Five County. I said, how are you beating this team? And he just gave me the generic answer. Oh, we just play tough, hustle, and, you know. Like, well, you're obviously a good coach kid because you're giving me those coaches' answers.
Right.
But sometimes teams just match up better with other teams. I think that's kind of a thing with Sentinel and Arapahoe. But, yeah, they're a team too. I mean, they could shock some people. They well-coached, like I said, and obviously a team that's doing something good. And maybe they are a little disrespected with the rankings.
Yeah, I mean, those wins against Arapahoe Butler stand out for sure.
Absolutely, they do.
With two of them, and not just one fluke win. They turned around and did it again.
Yeah, they proved that we can do it again.
That's
yeah.
Right. And so that it'll be interesting to see where they fall. You know, it feels like probably down the southern route with, say, I don't know, Indiana and Duke.
Over at Cash.
Yeah, something like that, you know. It mm-hmm. feels like maybe that's where they're headed with Mountain View, Godibo, and Fort Cobbs right there, too. I mean, they're all...
Yeah, I could see.
You know, two of those are going to have to come north.
Yes.
So maybe Fort Cobb and Mountain View, they're closer to I-40
right.
than, say, Indiahoma and Duke. So maybe they're the ones that are coming. Everybody meets at Weatherford or everybody meets here or, you know, whatever it is once those get drawn up. But Sentinel's another one to – they've been good all year. They really have.
They've been kind of flown
under the radar a bunch. Even the wins
that
they had against Arapahoe.
To the Bulldogs, no disrespect to them, but it's probably something like, well, we're just waiting for them to lose those games. We're accustomed to them losing, and they're not doing it this year.
No.
They're not doing it.
They're not losing this week, I can promise you that.
They're solid.
At Sweetwater and against Granite. They're not going to lose either one of those.
They're going to be fine there.
And then we'll see what they do next week in the tournament that they play in. All right. Fun stuff. I can't believe we're talking about high school playoff basketball. Didn't we just leave Guymon to start playing district football games? You know what I mean? It just flies by.
Yes.
We'll have Big Elk TV, Cool 94, Elk City and Weatherford over at the Eagle's Nest tonight, 6:15, pregame 6:30 tip. Arapahoe Butler, Mountain View Godibo, you talked about that boys' game, should be tremendous. Merritt and Sayre, hey, Battle for Beckham County,
how do we miss
basketball
that?
Edition.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.